Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, Very Remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, December 6, 2021. 40 people are killed in an intercommunal violence in Western Sudan.
Up to now, we're still receiving wounded people, even though the fighting stopped at around 5 a.m. this morning.
And humanitarian agencies resume operations in Greater Pibor administrative area after threats from angry youth.
The NGOs have come back because the problem with the youth last time has been resolved.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. More than 30 people were killed and 40 others injured in renewed intercommunal clashes in Sudan's West Darfur state over the weekend. Eyewitnesses say local militia, supported by the paramilitary group Rapid Support Forces, attacked internally displaced persons and burned down their houses. Medical officials at Kirinik Hospital say the death toll might rise as the hospital lacks medicine and equipment to treat the wounded. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Eyewitnesses in Kirinik say local militia and rapid support forces gunned down internally displaced people in the area over the weekend. They say it all began after a dispute erupted between an armed man and the owner of a phone charging center when the man refused to pay the charging cost. The armed man shot and killed the owner of the charging station, which touched off the attack. Mustafa Muhammad Zain, a medical assistant in Kirinik Hospital, says 30 bodies were brought to the facility. He tells South Sudan in Focus that more than 40 wounded people were also rushed to the hospital.
Up to now, we're still receiving wounded people, even though the fighting stopped at around 5 a.m. this morning. Some of them are in critical condition and some might die within the coming 1 or 2 hours.
Zain says the hospital lacks basic medical equipment and does not have enough medical workers to respond to such a situation. He is calling on state and national health authorities to urgently intervene.
This is a big rural hospital and it cannot be managed only by medical officers. The government is supposed to send us doctors to help the situation. We are running out of Dettol, gauze and cotton. We use all the reserve stock. Medical workers are not safe and they cannot go to the nearest location to get more medical supplies.
According to eyewitnesses, at least 26 people were killed and more than 40 others were wounded and 13 villages were burned down. They say more than 10,000 people were displaced from the Jebel Moon area of West Darfur state last week due to fighting, but the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan puts the figure at more than 4,300 people. Last week, Muhammad Isa Aliyu, the acting regional governor for Darfur, called the humanitarian situation in Jebel Moon horrific and appealed to aid agencies to quickly intervene. He confirmed that thousands of displaced families are already in eastern Chad and are being exposed to bad weather. Adam Rijal is the official spokesperson of Darfur Internal Displaced Persons. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus from Jebel Mara today, Rijal condemned the attacks on civilians, which he says will expose them to more vulnerability. Rijal accused some political leaders in Sudan's transitional government of being behind what he calls systematic attacks on indigenous civilians in Darfur.
The situation is so annoying and these militias intend to repeat what happened in 2003. This is an organized attack supported by some individuals in the national government. They want to kill, displace and occupy land of the innocent indigenous people.
Renewed clashes erupted between different groups across the Darfur region shortly after the joint United Nations and African Union peacekeeping mission ended its mandate a year ago. Rijal blames the UN Security Council for deciding unilaterally to withdraw from the area without consulting the affected population in Darfur.
We are supposed to have a voice on this decision because we are the ones facing the pain of the situation more than any other people. Now we are dying every day and no one cares or feels what we are going through.
Rijal says despite the peace agreement signed between the government and some armed groups in Darfur over a year ago, the area has not experienced stability. Under the Juba peace agreement, various forces were supposed to deploy a 12,000 strong forces in Darfur within 90 days to secure the area and provide protection for civilians. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Rescue operations to retrieve more bodies were continuing Sunday in Kenya's Kitui County after a 55-seater bus plunged into a river on Saturday. At least 33 bodies were retrieved from the ill-fated bus, including a 9-month-old baby. 10 survivors were rescued and are recuperating at Kitui Level 4 Hospital. As Atieno Odiembo reports from Nairobi, rescuers expect to find more bodies as reports indicate the bus was carrying more than 60 passengers.
A video footage of the tragedy showed the bus being swept away as it attempted to cross the swollen river on Saturday afternoon. The overloaded 51-seater bus was ferrying family members and Catholic Church choir members to a wedding ceremony. One of the survivors narrates what transpired moments before the ill-fated tragedy took place.
Jana tulikuwa tunaenda kwa harusi kule jini wapo tulifika katika mto Enzio.
Yesterday we were headed to a wedding ceremony. When we reached River Enziu, it had flooded, so we decided to wait for a while for it to subside. We waited for about 2 hours, then noticed some vehicles had successfully crossed over, and so we also decided to attempt crossing over. We got into the bus and also carried more passengers who requested for a lift. Halfway through the journey, the bus slipped and fell into the river.
Several hours later, a multi-agency operation led by Kenya Defense Forces to retrieve the capsized bus was successful on Sunday evening. The death toll as of Sunday evening was 33, with 10 survivors recuperating at Kitui Level 4 Hospital. Jas Mutua, one of the victims, who lost 15 family members, including his mother, siblings, and aunts in the tragedy, says the accident would have been avoided had there been a bridge across the river.
Unfortunately, I have lost like 15 family members because of negligence and poor performance of our politicians, our leaders. This bridge in Angakuzenga 2013, not even 2013, 2011. Up to date, the foundation stands Ziko Peke. And our leader, Tariti Kaloki Ngilo, flies in the helicopter while my mother sleeps there and my aunt sleeps there. Then I am very mad.
Local leaders visited the scene and condoled with the bereaved family members. Kitui County Governor Charity Ngilu acknowledged the loss of many lives and promised that plans are underway to construct a bridge over the river.
We have lost many lives in this river through this bridge, and I do hope this is not going to be a death trap every time we are having rains. Much as it is so painful, the people have felt fairly supported and comforted. I only want to say it's an accident. And I want to say here, when this happened, I also had a discussion. I called CS Macharia of Transport. And he said that this river, this bridge especially, is on course for it to be actually put up.
Machakos County Governor Alfred Mutua is urging drivers to be more vigilant, especially during this time when Kenya is experiencing heavy rainfall, which sometimes causes flooding in certain areas.
I send my condolences to the families, to the friends of beloved people who have perished in Mwingi in that very bad bus accident. I also condole with my fellow governor, Mama Charity Ngilu. This is a very heartbreaking time for all of us. And I urge all drivers at this moment, wherever the river is covered by water, wherever a place is covered by water, please, Do not play with water. Just wait until the water subsides. Just wait. It is better than losing so many lives.
Saturday's tragic bus accident is not the first time that lives have been lost in River Enziu, and the locals are calling for a quick action to be taken to avoid another tragedy. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA in Nairobi, Kenya.
Residents and authorities in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area are welcoming the return of humanitarian agencies to the area a few months after they evacuated Pibor following threats of violence by the area young people who were demanding employment. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, evacuated aid workers, including international staff, in October after local young men threatened to attack aid workers who hail from other parts of South Sudan if they did not leave within 72 hours. The youth accused some aid workers of occupying positions that they said should have gone to local community members and demanded that local and international humanitarian groups hire 80% of the workforce from the local community. When all aid agencies left the area, most Pibor residents were left helpless. 60-year-old Pibor resident Isaac Kinjen says he is excited to see the return of humanitarian agencies to Greater Pibor. Kinjen says day-to-day life had been terrible for vulnerable residents after aid workers left Pibor, but things are better now.
The NGOs have come back because the problem with the youth last time has been resolved. I am happy to see them return, especially in the hospital. Now, the treatment are going on well. Surgeries and deliveries for the women have now resumed. The situation was really bad for children and women when the hospital was not working.
Kinjen says most populations in the area is vulnerable and depends on humanitarian assistance. He urges young people in Greater Pibor to always seek their rights in a peaceful manner so that the actions do not affect vulnerable people.
I am telling the young people that if you have any complaints, you sit down and discuss and don't be violent, so that our children continue to get early care service and good education, and pregnant women are delivered safely. Don't fight with NGOs. They came to help us.
Pibor resident Kamis Boyoi says he is very grateful for the return of NGOs to Greater Pibor, saying they will be able to rescue the lives of those in danger. Boyoi says the area communities were left with no access to relief aid, including food, water, and medicines. He says many people suffer from waterborne diseases caused by recent floods.
These NGOs, they're helping many people in our area here. So they come and supply a lot of things to our people. There is some food stuff and there is some medicine that they give to the people here. So for the return of them, we are so happy and we are welcoming them back.
Jai Adingora Alwal, the information minister in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, welcomed the return of NGOs, saying a huge gap existed in the humanitarian sector, especially in the healthcare, after humanitarian agencies left in October. He says the government could not afford to hire qualified doctors to fill the gap due to the low salary scale.
Most of the humanitarian organizations that were working in Pibor here have now returned, and they are now serving the vulnerable communities of Greater Pibor. The demand of the youth, where they demanded 80% of the employment, was actually discussed in the presence of the government and the organizations led by UN OCHA. So during the discussions, they came to understand that what was meant by 80% was not only individuals or some people from Greater Pibor only. It involved other locals also from other parts of South Sudan.
Alwal confirmed that several health facilities, including Pibor Hospital, have resumed operations in the area.
The life of the local communities have returned to normalcy, because if you can see it carefully, during their absence, there was that vacuum in which most of these local people were not getting treatment and so forth. Now the life of the local communities have returned to normal because the humanitarian are serving them.
In recent years, young people issued threats against humanitarian agencies and their workers, demanding employment in Reng of Upper Nile State, Minkaman of Legi State, Bor in Jonglei State, and Torit in Eastern Iguatoria State, among other places. The threats, which sometimes involve attacks on certain facilities run by aid agencies, led to the suspension of humanitarian activities and the relocation of workers. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, an oil company is held accountable for crimes committed in South Sudan. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The South Sudan Council of Churches is welcoming a decision by Swedish authorities to hold oil firm Lundin Energy accountable for crimes committed against the people of Unity State while exploiting oil between 1997 and 2003 in what was known as Block 5 oil concession. A representative of the council told a news conference in Juba that persecuting Lundin Energy executives will help heal the wounds of those affected in Unity State and pave way for reconciliation and peace. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
South Sudan Council of Churches representative Andrea Minala, who doubles as the program manager of PACS, an organization calling for justice for victims of oil exploitation, says it's encouraging to see that Swedish authorities will hold Lundin Energy accountable for committing crimes against Unity State residents some two decades ago during the civil war between and then Southern Sudan and the Sudanese government.
There is no peace without justice, no reconciliation outside the truth, no forgiveness without repentance. Many grave crimes have been committed against our people in South Sudan, and peace remains elusive without justice.
Minala says during the late 1990s and early 2000s, Lundin Energy was complicit in the displacement of thousands of people, murder and lost property, and the decision by Swedish authorities proves that human life is valued.
The church stood and will always stand with the victims of oil exploration 20 years ago, and they still do today. Victims of abuses in villages and homes around the oil field have the right to access to remedy and reparation.
Lundin Energy is a Swedish oil company that arrived in Unity State in 1997 to explore and exploit oil. At the time, it was relatively peaceful in the area, according to Egbert Wesseling, a representative of the project Unpaid Debt Advocacy. Unpaid Debt Advocacy was initiated in 2006 with an aim of remedying victims of oil exploitation in then Southern Sudan, now South Sudan. Wesseling says when Lundin Energy came to Unity State, it requested security services from the Sudanese government. Wesseling says the company's influence on the Sudanese government led to massive abuse of human rights in the area.
We're essentially talking about bombing of civilians by transport. You know, the Antonovs, they cannot aim very well, but they try to destroy villages where there were civilians living, not military targets. They deliberately destroyed villages, pillaged the population, abducted people, murdered, and disfigured people and destroyed means of survival of the population.
Westlink says an estimated 12,000 people were believed to have died as a result of displacement, bombing, and forceful eviction after London discovered oil in the area in 1999. Last month, Swedish prosecutors brought charges against the chairman and former CEO of London Energy for complicity in war crimes carried out by the Sudanese army and elite militia in the then Southern Sudan from 1999 to 2003. Prosecutors said the oil firm asked the Sudanese government to secure a potential oil field, knowing it would mean seizing the area by force, which made the oil executives complicit in war crimes carried out by the Sudanese army and elite militia against the civilians. In its response published on its website on November 12, London Energy denied all criminal charges announced by the Swedish court, saying the company committed no wrongdoing while exploring for oil in Unity State. Westlink says holding London Energy accountable for crimes committed in Unity State will send a strong message to other companies operating in South Sudan.
Many companies are linked with human rights violations in many, many countries in the world. Usually, they do not have to fear for any court. They basically tend to hide behind the governments of the countries where they work. They say, well, we do what the government wants us to do, we have an agreement, we respect local laws, etc. But if now this company and its two leaders can actually be brought to justice, that will mean that in corporate boardrooms in general, the risk evaluation changes. And we hope to see that one of the consequences of this case is that international companies cannot escape justice as easily as they used to, and that way they will behave better.
This is the first time an oil company is being prosecuted in court of law to answer charges related to its activities in what was then Sudan, now part of South Sudan. Despite calls by many rights groups for oil companies to be held accountable for violations committed while operating oil fields in what is now South Sudan, very few have been brought to justice. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Hospitals in Gauteng province, which contains two of South Africa's biggest cities, are packed with people infected with the Omicron variant of COVID-19. Doctors say most patients haven't been vaccinated, and an alarming number are children under the age of 5. For VOA News, Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Data from South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, shows almost 2,500 COVID-19 cases reported per day 2 weeks ago when local scientists announced they'd identified a new variant. On Friday, this had spiked to around 16,500 per day. The steep rise indicates Omicron's highly transmissible nature. The NICD says the increase in cases in such a short period of time is unprecedented in the trajectory of the pandemic.
And unfortunately, we're seeing a more than doubling of hospital admissions each day.
Professor Ian Sun is an infectious diseases specialist who serves on South Africa's COVID-19 Presidential Advisory Committee. He's advising hospitals to prepare for significant surges of patients in the coming weeks and months and to make sure they have plenty of oxygen. Dr. Farid Abdullah of the South African Medical Research Council says the surges are already happening in Johannesburg and Tshwane.
There's been a rather rapid rise in hospital admissions with patients who have COVID, whether they are presenting with COVID pneumonia or severe COVID disease, or other conditions and are incidentally testing positive for COVID. All of the hospitals in Tshwane are seeing an upsurge, and the COVID bed occupancy is increasing 30-40% per day over the last few days.
Only 36% of people in South Africa are fully vaccinated. Sun says those who haven't received the jab are particularly susceptible to Omicron, as are individuals who haven't been exposed to COVID-19 before.
At this time, we think about 75% to 80% of hospitalizations are unvaccinated. It could be as large as 40% of the population that has not yet either been vaccinated or had a previous infection with coronavirus up until now. Multiply the transmission rate that is occurring times the number of people that still can become infected, and a portion of those becoming hospitalized. And so we have a large pool of people who can still present with overwhelming infection and severe disease.
Health authorities say Omicron's reinfecting some people who've been vaccinated, but mostly their symptoms are mild. One of the country's top epidemiologists, Professor Salim Abdul Karim, told VOA current vaccines should provide good protection against Omicron. However, the World Health Organization says only 3% of people in Africa are fully vaccinated. Another disease expert, Professor Shabir Mahdi, says the longer viruses flourish in populations, the more likely they are to mutate into variants.
Without any question, if we were to vaccinate more people, we would be able to dampen the amount of virus that would be circulating. We're not going to eliminate this virus under any stretch of the imagination, but we can reduce the amount of virus that's circulating. And most importantly, is that vaccines are going to be much more foolproof when it comes to protecting against severe disease than taking your chances of all being vaccinated.
San agrees that COVID-19 is going to be around for a long time, and those who believe the disease will eventually just fizzle out are wrong.
The problem is that RNA viruses don't follow those patterns, and indeed they actually become more efficient in their transmission without necessarily reducing the disease risk. It is over time that our immune system needs to catch up. We therefore don't have the ability to predict that this virus as a virus becomes weaker, whereas we do in fact see that the immune system will improve with time to in fact deal with the infection.
The South African government's expected to soon make vaccination mandatory in some settings in an effort to reduce the impact of a fourth wave of the pandemic. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with Emmanuel Kembe and his song Akolobarao. Listening to Emmanuel Kembe and the song Akolobarao. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kalimanjere kuam begel ba wahid na shukuru rabuna le khirat ketira luwati lalina na limu yata sawa narfa belet na fob nasibu kubru geliba na narfa belet na fob kalina kalina.